I think it would be very difficult to separate those out and to say what, whether or not they could function independently. Not only could we measure them independently, but could they be functional? Or are they so interdependent that they don't exist in the absence of the other? I don't know.
So His Holiness's point is that how far does this tight interdependence really go? You know, and from the Buddhist point of view, the interest is that, you know, there is this idea of a different degrees of subtlety of mental experience. So how far will this tight interconnectedness or interdependence?
So that calls for scientific research into these different strata of consciousness, and not just assume they're all on the same level and therefore all necessarily interconnected or interdependent upon the brain.
I mean, I think from a scientific perspective, the honest answer is that we don't know. That
same would be from the Buddhist as well.
Phil, you're right.
I want to. I think it makes the tension or whatever you call it, the point clearer. If you were monitoring the person while you're asking them to subtract 17 serially from this number, the auditory system is going to be measurably active to hearing those instructions, and the calculations are going to be. You could notice where the calculations are occurring. And you could notice the connection between the difficulty of it and the hippocampus. So there is in that case at least, I don't think there's any subtle level that doesn't directly get mapped into neural processes. You know what I mean? So I think it's important to make clear that's not subtle right now in current neuroscience. Every mental calculation, during that situation, I mean, I've done this with subjects myself, they become embarrassed. They're stumbling over the numbers. And when they do that, their heart rate changes, their blood pressure changes, a bunch of stress responses occur. So from hearing the instructions all the way through to the stress response, you could see where the processes are going on in the brain.
So here we have an instance of, even though it's internally induced, but it is the immediate trigger is someone else's sort of, statement or instruction. So, but we can also imagine a situation where this could be induced by the individual himself or herself without any dependence upon a kind of an immediate sensory experience.
You can stress yourself out just with your own imagination.
Yeah, I'm just saying while you were doing that, you'd be firing neurons. If you have a memory of a traumatic experience, the fact of the occurrence of the memory, at least in principle, could be measured wherever that occurs, and its emotional reaction on the person could be measured from the brain.
But His Holiness was saying that even in the case of reliving of a traumatic experience, again, this is partly triggered by something that you have already stored. But this may be quite different from someone purely imagining, whether it is a fantasy or something, can have a totally different internal process, and also stress oneself out.
Michael, there's actually an interesting resolution to that. If you look at the type of events that you're speaking of, that you touched on, what seems to be the key component of triggering stress response is the perception of being evaluated. When there's a threat to oneself, that's really when you start to show the greatest physiological responses, which brings you back to the first discussion. But that gets you to the point where then you, of course, can easily imagine that if you have an internal monitoring of yourself and you are performing something that's discontinuous with that, that's threatening your own image of self, then you can, in that sense, generate a very severe stress response through behaving and simply observing and commenting on your own behaviors. But this notion of evaluation, when people who work in stress responses monitor what really is critical, it's very often the evaluation, the threat of having yourself evaluated.